secretary.
Not bad.
There's your secretary. All right, so we are here at your request to talk about the recycling budget and relevant statutes and resolutions related to the service charge that we have for the landfill. We have called that a tipping fee in the past. It's not really a tipping fee, it's a service charge to the landfill. So just making sure that we're accurate.
Who says that? You said that?
Well,
the the information you sent us made that pretty clear.
Yeah, I thought so.
It didn't say tipping fee anywhere in there.
A tipping fee is what you'd be charged if you, you know, brought your truck and trailer and dropped off, you know, a load at the landfill. You'd be charged a tipping fee. This is a service charge for...
Well, it's funny that all the legislation, that's all they talk about is tipping fees.
But the legislation Eric sent didn't say tipping fee.
Yeah. So anyway, it's not a big deal, and we should not get hung up on
that. No, I agree.
You want to talk about that for the next half hour? No?
Okay? No. And so I gave you a little history background. Eric and I were able to dig up the relevant resolutions, which was difficult because it was really difficult. It's lucky you had that file because the search criteria for one of those resolutions would have been impossible to find in the database. So I'm glad that you have that stuff.
It's all thanks to Sue.
Thanks to Sue. So
another
gold star for Sue. And so I assume that you've read this, you know, what the background is. And based on the information that I got, there was some money in reserve.
And that was the basis of the question,
right?
Was what's the plan for that money, and also what are the options for that money?
Right.
So if you have some insight on that, that would be great.
And so I guess that the way I understood it, maybe it's not absolutely correct, that extra money automatically went to the bridge, but I guess that's not the case.
Not automatically. No.
So you have to make a choice.
Okay.
Well, so Dan Stranad let us know that we are... I mean, he probably should have been here, but he said we're maxed out. That was his term on what we can do in terms of extra payments to the bridge.
Oh, okay. So we can't use that extra money for the bridge.
Because we can't pay it off any sooner.
Amortization table, any prepaid years on the amortization table.
Okay.
So it sounds like we're already paying extra on the bridge, and we cannot pay any more extra.
Gotcha.
So just to be clear, we don't have the ability to pay off the bridge early?
We're already paying it off early, but based on what Dan said, we can't pay anymore.
It's not clear, no. You know, it's not clear in any resolution, and
we didn't
determine that, and that was really
because we know with the Justice Center, for example, we can't really pay it off, or there's no advantage in paying it off early.
So this was paying us back, because we fronted the money for the bridge. And then
we said that the tipping fee
or the service charge, the 15 cents, was going to pay us the general fund back for that service charge.
So it's hard to imagine what would stand in the way of us paying ourselves back early.
As far as I would be concerned, nothing. So,
so we need
to advancing the amortization table.
So there's a question for accounting, it sounds like.
Yep.
Yeah.
It'd be good to know the answer to that question. That doesn't mean that I would automatically want to pay it off early. I'd just like to know if I could.
When he was in here, he told us that we couldn't pay it off any faster than we already are, but he didn't say why.
We should have challenged him.
We should have asked. We'll just ask him more questions about
that. Okay, so that's one option. I thought...
Maybe.
And then I don't know what the life of the bridge is, and if it makes any sense to put money in escrow for a new bridge.
So we already are.
Okay.
It is.
Oh, because we have replacement. Okay.
It's in the replacement pool already.
So that's good. And then the other ideas that I have is to support recycling programs. And so we actually had a meeting to discuss that this morning, and you know, we know that our green machines that we have right now, it's not working super well just because we're getting a lot of contamination. I think that we're getting the normal amount of contamination that we expect, around 30%, but I think it's bumping
30%?
Is pretty normal for single stream, yeah. And then I think that we're getting extra contamination because there's folks that are just dumping their trash in there. And so we want to try to improve those programs. And so as a part of this Waste Aversion Strategic Plan, we have groups that are discussing these issues. And there's also some need possibly to put another green machine over in the Stagecoach area. But we don't want to put another one out there and continue a program that isn't working very well. We want to try to improve the program, whether that means putting some extra money in the budget to YVSC so they can occasionally attend those times when those buckets are out there to do education, whether we create some signs. There's some other ideas where maybe you can make things more efficient by combining a trash drop-off combined with a recycling drop-off in the same area. So maybe a truck isn't traveling all the way around the neighborhood. Rather, they're just going to one location. And if you had trash and recycling, then you're more likely or less likely to get the contamination. So anyway, but how do you keep people from just coming and dumping their trash that aren't a part of that HOA?
So what's happening with the hazardous materials? Is that
so that's another
taken
idea.
Care of on cleanup day?
Yeah.
And rest?
Yeah. And we were talking about maybe funding another day and doing two hazardous waste days, but the city is interested in picking up one of those days. So, and that's been a really successful program so far. We are a little down on numbers this year, so hopefully that means we're working ourselves out of that program by just having less of that material around. Most of it is paint. And that's taken care of under the paint program.
Well, that and a lot of the vendors are taking that paint back themselves, too, like the oil, too.
That's right.
Are they not?
Well, and that's part of the communication piece that we're trying to do at the event, is making people aware that Ace Hardware and Sherman Williams will take paint at any point during the year. But please don't bring it by today, because everybody...
So I can't pull this up. How much money's in the fund that we're worrying about here, anyhow?
It's about $30,000 is what's listed under the reserve line item. So if you go that one right there, Doug, if you can make it bigger, then at the bottom it says.
So certainly knowing that that money is there, I'm positive that we can put some more thought and time into how to better support some of these waste diversion programs. And we have some ideas.
Did you get it?
But I think that we need to think and develop some other ideas, knowing that we have that funding available. It could go towards education. Better
I still
signage.
Want to asphalt the road myself.
So would that be a long-term savings in maintenance if you asphalt the road?
Would make a better road, be environmentally more friendly as well.
Generally speaking, it seems like if we pave a road, the long-term cost of paving it and chipping it and shipping it and paving it is roughly equal to the maintenance cost of a dirt road.
Yeah. And so we end up having, we wouldn't be putting mag chloride on it every day.
Not have to grade it all the time. But there's no significant savings.
And then the
right.
clean trucks.
And what's the wear and tear? I mean, do you have to build up a thicker bed of asphalt like we did for the Hall Road for the mine because of the heavier trucks driving on it?
That's a good question.
So it'd have to be engineered.
I don't think it's that bad. I mean, we rebuilt the road twice since. Anyhow,
so anyway,
I don't want to rule that out either. I don't have a problem. And again, we don't need to hoard the money either. And it'd probably be good if we had some. I'm a little concerned about dumping a bunch of money in this fund here into something that should be personal responsibility some a little bit too. So
we have to educate them on their personal responsibility.
I totally agree, and I'm not sure how that happens, but yeah.
Are we committed to multi-stream recycling?
Single
that's
stream?
It? Or just
single stream?
Or single stream?
No, we're having those discussions, and not all of us just agree all the time on the best way to do things, but there's a lot of things in motion right now. The city, I think, is going to do a study that will help inform their ordinance. I would contend that that we've shifted from quantity over quality to quality over quantity, given that we can't ship all of these things overseas anymore. And so I think the game has changed a little bit. We talk about wanting the wanting the fate to drive our collection activities instead of the other way around. And so there's a lot of things happening, and you know, I think this study will help inform where the ordinance goes. We've talked a lot about maybe trying to have a drop-off facility, but I think that we see in Summit County that they lose money on those facilities. I think that we have to acknowledge that recycling costs money, and then it's incumbent on us to try to figure out what's the most cost-effective, efficient way to do it, what are the costs, and then ask the community, are you willing to pay these costs? And so I think that there's a lot of problems with the way we're doing things now, but there's also a lot of wheels in motion and people thinking and discussing improvements. And one of the things we discussed today was Sunray Meadows. You know, one of our goals was to get these multifamily facilities start to recycle. And so they've implemented a system there that's beginning that process. We want to watch that and see how it goes. We also want to be transparent about you know, what's going on. You know, Twin isn't recycling glass, and yet people are putting glass in the recycle containers. That glass is going to the landfill, and so if
we're not supposed to put glass in the green machine?
Well, waste management is continuing to recycle glass, but Twin isn't.
So when I put glass in the green machine, I'm screwing up?
The green machine is waste management.
Oh, okay.
So even the thought of helping MRF and less, I mean, we don't know any idea how the MRF is doing either.
Well, the information that we have about the MRF is that they need sufficient volume to make it work. But it's a mini MRF. It's a pretty small facility. And, you know, you have to remember that it's tied to these hauling operations.
No, and it's
the money is
tied to the ultimate consumer of this recycle, whoever's getting that or needs it, I guess, huh?
Well, so, you know, the game is to get hauling customers. And so you're willing to take some losses and work under that to try to get those hauling customers. So, you know, that's why some of this stuff is happening, but it's happening at a loss. And we're concentrating on how to make these processes more efficient and then also try to be more transparent about what's going on. And it makes it difficult when you have these private businesses because they're doing what they can to try to get more customers. And it's been super active lately because Aces High went away. So anyway, it's interesting and it's messy, but we have people working on it, and I think that we can probably find some good uses for some of that money, especially through education.
So the bottom line, though, the $30,000 sitting there and then burning a hole in our pocket, I don't think we need to. And again, we'd have to ask Trinette why we couldn't prepay down the note or whatever the money that we put into the bridge. Again, like I said, I don't know. I'm still environmentally thinking about the asphalting the road as well. Might still be, or even a double chip seal or something like that.
What's the cost on that, though? It's way more than $30,000, right?
Yeah, but we would still end up doing it ourselves. And as Tim says, I mean, so we'd front the money up.
Yeah, we're spending X number of dollars every year as it is right now maintaining that gravel road.
And again, Road and Bridge could tell us, well, that's not even worth our time because now we can't plow it with road grader either. Mm-hmm. We've already got it on our schedule.
Right.
We'll need to plow it with plow truck instead of plowing with road grader. So I don't know. Maybe that's just an unworkable concept, too. I just don't want to subsidize, you know, the recycling thing when we're subsidizing and hauling it to somebody else's dump in Front Range. If that's what we're doing, we don't know that. So,
well, and I guess maybe more emphasis needs to go into making sure we understand fate, and then we work backwards. But I think that's the
understand
right.
What
fate,
like what happens to the recyclables.
Yeah, right. And then we work backwards and try to tailor our collection towards that,
and then be
transparent about the cost.
Yep.
So this is what it's going to cost. Are you guys public? Are you willing to pay this cost? And then, you know, it's an ever-evolving market. You know, things go up and down, and how do you tailor your programs to accommodate for those changes? It's tough. And right now, recycling is really tough. I mean, yeah. It's costing more now than it has in recent memory, at least. So
anyway. It sounds like this just stood out to us, you know, that there was $30,000 sitting here year after year. I mean, it looks like for at least the past, you know, probably 5 years, and we don't know beyond that.
Well, I think I can come up with some good ideas.
Well, it sounds like what I hear is we want to look into paying off the bridge and confirm with Sternad about why that's not an option, and then as well as looking at the asphalt, and then probably looking at your ideas around supporting the recycling program.
Yeah, and so I think that's what I'll do is talk with, you know, these groups that we have set up, and we'll come up with some ideas and come back to you guys. And this recycling or this waste study won't be done until this summer. There was another study that was just completed in Summit County that I think will help inform us because it's similar. So we'll look at all this stuff and try to make some decisions on how to best move forward. But knowing that there's a pot of money out there that would help support some of these programs, I think is good.
Are we good on that?
Yeah.
I think we pretty much can wait.
The bottom line is, you know, I think everybody needs to know we're not rat hole and we're not dumping the money at the general fund. It's actually being accounted for.
Right.
Absolutely.
But I think we also don't want to keep collecting it and just sitting on it year after year after year. I mean, if there's something beneficial that can be done with it, we should do it.
Well, we're not collecting anything extra. I mean, as it is.
No, I know, but we're collecting more than we need on what we're already
those reserves are,
you're right, they're not growing, they're just sitting there. I don't
we're collecting.
We have collected that much
in the banks,
right.
And it's sitting
right.
And so I've been trying to keep close track of our fees, and you know, also comparing it to the cubic yards and tonnages that, you know, the state is also getting a fee, and you know, making sure that the total cubic yards reported for route is similar to the total cubic yards for the state, and then looking at a variance, and you know, just trying to keep that information up to date, and do the best we can to try to keep them honest. And I also, you know, I maintain this graph that looks at the amount of income from the fees every year. And you can see it really spiked between 2005 and 2010.
Because of construction activity.
Right, but it's somewhat surprising that it's not...
Has not recovered?
Yeah.
I imagine that our builders have gotten a lot better about filling up dumpsters like they used to.
There could be a lot of reasons for it. And hopefully it isn't underreporting.
No, I actually probably would think that the builders are probably being more frugal with their materials, too.
They're putting heavy equipment on site to press everything down.
So anyway, but we're doing our best to keep track of that. What would be nice is to compare that to the amount of volume that's being occupied at the landfill. But that's a lot of work. And but, you know, since we don't have a lot of oversight...
Right.
To me, it makes sense to try to do that every once in a while. Just, and you know, like we always say with the restaurants, half of keeping a restaurant in good shape is them knowing that we could show up. You know, it's not necessarily showing up. And so it's the same thing. You know, if they know that we're looking at these things and that we're going to show up every once in a while, that's half the battle, probably, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, just so you know, that I'm trying to keep track of that stuff and doing the best I can as far as
understanding that. So we probably ought to
ask
Ray and the three road and bridge foremen to see if there's any garbage out there. We've used this fund to clean up other contracting with somebody to clean up some stuff, like coming out of Oak Creek Canyon, the old dump area right there.
Yeah.
The stuff. But we there for a while.
And there's even, I mean, there's a budget item in environmental health, $1,000 for that specifically.
Oh, is that right? So it's environmental health, is it?
I think that that's, I
this
mean, that's
can
where
be
it was
used
when I started.
That. I mean, it says yeah. so right in the
yeah. and I would
statute
be,
and the...
I would be totally open to doing that.
Yeah.
Waste tires or...
Or something we see alongside the road or something that somebody dumped.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while you'll see a couch out there or somebody, yeah. you know. So I don't know, it's our not our road and bridge department's job to go be cleaning up trash, but...
We could, if we've got money to pay for it.
Exactly. We can have somebody else do it and farm it out. So
I have a question of ignorance. So Twin Landfill does not recycle glass.
Not currently. I mean, okay. what I'm being told, and I keep asking for the inspection report from the state, because I don't want that information coming from me. I want the information to come from the state. And they'll say something about that in the next inspection report.
That's fine. So so what does Waste Management do? Do they ship the glass to the Front Range?
They do. And I don't know if it goes to Momentum in Broomfield. I assume that it does. There is a large glass recycling facility in Broomfield that is hurting because they're not getting enough volume. But when it, you know, if they're giving you $100 for your load of glass and it's costing you $120 to get it there,
yeah.
you know.
There you can get gravel. And it's that most of that, I mean, Connell used to put in the asphalt. I mean, that's what...
Yeah, that's all. That was originally.
If gravity,
even 30, 40 years ago,
but
yeah. that's what they were starting to use
if,
it for.
You know, if Waste Management is doing that at a loss and Twin isn't, and then Twin can charge less for a trash bill?
Hauling, yeah.
Yep.
That's not fair.
Another question I have. So the MRF, the way that works is that the recycling material comes in, it gets dumped in, and then they, right there, the MRF sorts out what's
that's
not
right.
recyclable, and then they put it in the landfill.
And here's another thing is that there's certain plastics that Waste Management evidently is accepting that they aren't at the MRF, and so that makes their cost less that way, too. And so it's not really a level playing field, and you always have to connect it back. Hauling is where the money's made. And so, you know, it's a free market economy, but it's...
You have to be an informed consumer.
And there's a lot of misinformation out there, too.
So it looks like that $1,000 is in this budget. I mean, so hopefully it's not twice, because it says illegal dump site cleanup.
You're probably right.
And it's in the budget... Starting in 19.
Which is supported by the tipping fees.
And I think maybe
service
I moved it from environmental
charges.
Health. Maybe I moved it from environmental health over to the recycling
okay.
budget.
But it's coming out of this budget, according to this.
Is there a limit on what we can charge as a service charge? I mean,
I don't remember.
I mean, we started at 25 cents. We went to 40 cents. Could we go to a buck if we just wanted to really start supporting recycling at a much higher level?
If it can be justified.
You have to have a hearing.
Pardon?
If it can be justified.
Okay.
So we'll do need to do a nexus study, so.
I don't think it requires a nexus study.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
But at the same point in time, realistically, you have to defend it.
I'm not advocating for an increase in the fees. And I'm really appreciative, Scott, that's a great way you put it. I didn't know the word that you were using. You're talking about the fate. I get it now. The fate of these materials, working backwards from that to what we can do to
yeah.
meet that fate or that demand or whatever you want to call it, and then we can make a rational decision about how much money we want to spend on it and how
right.
much work
that's
might
the
be
way
willing
to do it,
to charge.
In my mind. It yeah. feels good to collect it, but what are we doing if mm-hmm. If we're hauling single stream to Denver and then 30% of it is going to some landfill in Denver, you know?
Yeah.
And we're talking about ideas like, you know, source separation instead of single stream, a drop-off site. We talked this morning a little bit about, well, what if week one was cardboard, week two was plastic, week three was glass, and week four was... We're anything and everything that we can think of to make this process as efficient as we can, and then ask the consumer, how much are you willing to pay? Because recycling costs money.
So your goal is it sounds like the primary goal would be to reduce contamination at this point, because
yeah.
that's where our problem is
that's
currently.
Right. And then we also want to start to include our condominiums, and because they're not recycling, most of them aren't recycling at all. And so that's another big goal is to try to capture that, because if you need volume, well, there's a lot of volume.
Yeah, I understand. I've been told many times that all the studies have shown that it does not make sense for individuals to sort their recyclables, that single stream is the only way to get it going. But I got to tell you, when my shoulder was messed up, I missed my Monday down at Yampa, and I ended up running out of space, and I took a Saturday, and I drove down to the Eagle landfill, took my recycling down there. And it was free. It was great. But I had to separate it when I got there, when I was happy to do it.
Well,
I separated three things. There was, you can do cardboard, glass, and it was kind of like everything else. And
so,
it wasn't that big of a deal to me, but I get it probably is to a lot of people.
So if you think about it, you get some single stream, it gets sorted here, and then bundled, right? And then it gets taken to Denver. And then they have to sort it again there.
Cut the bundles.
So look at all of the inefficient process that goes through that. So the most efficient way is source separating it here and then taking it directly to market. But what infrastructure and needs, do you have to enable that process to work? You have to have somebody that's collecting the source separation, and you're having to collect it somewhere and then having to haul it off to market. So that's the most efficient way, because you've taken all those steps out. But, we're not really set up to do that.
Getting back to your fate, if the fate of these materials is, say, that only 30% of it's really getting recycled, and if we drop...
So what we're saying is contamination is 30%, which would imply
70%. Okay, 70%. So 70% of the materials are getting to market, and that's really... the only demand, it may make sense to ask people to separate it, because we're just...
Right, and I would say that, even though there's 30% contamination, I would very seriously doubt that 70% was making it to market.
Right.
But that's where we need to put our effort into figuring out fate, and it's hard, it's some uncomfortable truths, because you're getting involved in that competition for getting hauling customers. So the message that is getting sent to the public isn't necessarily what's actually happening in the background.
Well, we don't need to be separating a lot of it. It's going to the dump anyhow. That's my concern.
But, I don't know why you'd ever want to do that.
Another data point would be interesting to know is, I remember hearing some time ago, even before I was commissioner, that our landfill has a 100-year life.
So, I think that maybe was the message. But and with this new EDOP, we'll get some specific information.
Okay.
So, one of the things about Rapp County and the West in general is we have a lot of space.
Right.
And think about a place like Hawaii. They don't have space for a landfill. That drives innovation for being able to divert waste. And so what we're trying to do here is to take some of those innovative processes and try to implement them, because it's the right thing to do. But it's difficult here because we don't have a lot of incentive, right? And so we'll see in this EDOP that, how many years that they have left in phase one, and then how many years that they have in phase two. And phase two would basically be the end of the area that's currently permitted, right? And then Twin or Less owns the land to the west, which has been mined. So conceivably that could be a phase three. But what are the permitting requirements and the costs? And,
it's so easy to say there's 100-year capacity. But
yeah, and I think to get to 100 years, I think to get to 100 years, you're probably going to have to buy some adjacent property. So maybe Ed isn't willing to sell any more adjacent property. So you really have to take a closer look, not take people's word for it. That
right.
It depends on a lot of different things. And it depends also on, it's just like the mine, how much life is left in the reserve? Well, it depends on how much they sell. We're only selling 3 or 4 million tons now. So Wolf Creek seems going to last a lot longer. selling 3 or 4 million tons, and it would sell in 8 million tons.
Looks like there's probably a lot of capacity underground over there.
So
it sounds like you'll follow up on some of those questions.
Yeah,
and then
I think
maybe
that
come back
find
to us
some
with
really good uses for at least part of it. I mean,
yeah.
We can
after we take a look at the bridge and the asphalt options as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we can support development of a drop-off site. Maybe we put it towards education and signage. Maybe we support another green machine, given that we can try to improve that contamination.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that we could come up with a lot of other ideas.
And I assume there's some research out there on what reduces contamination. I mean, I assume someone studied that at some point.
Yeah, I think that the main thing that reduces contamination is having somebody, along with education. But
some
then you're still trusting
officer.
People. And so,
yeah.
And so, you know, having people watch the drop-off areas and monitor the drop-off
I found
areas.
An entire eggplant in our recycling bin at my HOA. I was so mad.
Yeah.
A bear had come and knocked over our recycling bin, and so I was cleaning it up, and there was literally a bag of tortillas and an eggplant. I was like, what?
Do we have any way of...
it's compost, right? Maybe
of quantifying which
yeah,
rain
right?
machines, which locations are doing a better job than other ones? I mean, public shaming is always a good method.
It's a, yeah. It's a good call, Tim.
I think it's sort of equally dysfunctional at this
okay.
point.
I mean, if it turned out that Yampa was doing twice as good a job as everybody
then
else...
Then Tim would want credit.
Then, yes, I'd want credit for that. We could start making comparisons between communities.
But yeah, you know, luckily we have this strategic plan in place, and we have people who are engaged. We're making progress on the composting end of things, struggling with C&D and business waste diversion, but I think that we're in a much better position now with the information that we have and also the people power that we have behind trying to make these processes work a little bit better. I think that this study in July will really help inform, and the idea is to help inform changes to the ordinance. And so that'll help.
The city's ordinance you're talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the waste diversion study that was done a couple of years ago, you know, we see how we can maybe take advantage regionally, partner with people regionally to try to make things more efficient. And that, you know, I think it showed 30% contamination. And I think the biggest contamination was food waste. And so, you know, there's been a lot of emphasis with the strategic plan on food waste and trying to capture that and get that out of the waste stream. So I think we're positioned well to make changes in the right way, but it's tough. And it costs money, but there's a lot of good people that are working on it. So.
Thanks, Scott. I guess I am now, Catherine.
I didn't want to call you guys up.
Come on up.
First, I want to
you have to come up. Come,
you, we have to hear you, Catherine.
Okay. I just want to first, you know, thank Scott for his great work on this.
Would you please introduce yourself for
Catherine
the record?
Carson. I live at 307 Locust Court. And I want to thank Scott for his great work with the YVSC and the city on both the climate action plan and waste diversion. And thank the commissioners. You know, Doug, for many years, you and Nancy, I think, started the service fee. I've been calling it the tipping fee too. For going
Eric shamed us
for waste diversion. One thing I want to mention, and Doug probably remembers this too. I kind of had deja vu. Remember the commissioners, a different group of commissioners, talking about the reserve years ago, and I think part of it was because we had the goal of reducing, you know, increasing waste diversion, which would thereby reduce the service fee. So by having that reserve in there as a cushion to transfer into new fundings, after we really knocked it out of the park. And reduce the waste diversion and increase recycling and other and or increased waste and increased other waste diversion. So you might want to consider keeping some reserve in there, just with our goal of reducing the items tossed in the landfill. And then also the Colorado Sun had a really good article that was a summary on the overall Colorado recycling plan.
Not doing very good.
I saw it.
But it's a good article to read. And actually the recycling plan, the statewide recycling plan, was a good one too. Brout County and Steamboat is actually mentioned as one of the positives for our collection, our community collections that we do twice a year. And as Scott said, one of the big things they're just trying to do is increase the volume of materials that can be recycled. And, you know, and obviously the end destination is important, but glass is a key example. We've got Monument Recycling, who's only operating at 60% of their capacity, and they're actually bringing in glass from Michigan in order to recycle glass. And we've got glass right here we're throwing away. And then the question of, you know, sort or single stream. The single stream numbers, the way that they, this nationwide study just show, is that you have that 30% contamination, but the total quantity is higher, so you get more recycled items.
I think I always understood that logic.
Yeah. So the study is going to, I think what Scott said, you know, fortunately Main Street Steamboat is kicking in money to have this study that hopefully we can actually tighten up the city ordinance and maybe enforce it.
Well, and I think it's true that you do get more volume overall, but then the question becomes, is all that stuff really being recycled?
That's the retort I was going to make to you, which is, certainly, that's great if it increases volume, but maybe we'd be better off with less volume, more quality being used.
I think the key thing, the market has a bit of incentive for that, because for waste management, I'll use them as the example, just because they're our local company. It's a financial disincentive for them to have high contamination, because then they have to pay to haul it to Denver and to pay a landfill fee in Denver. So it's to their financial benefit to have clean recycling. Now on the flip side, and I'm not saying anyone's doing anything good or bad, but it's a financial incentive for a local hauler who's right by the landfill to just, if it's more expensive to recycle it, it's a financial incentive to stay from the landfill. So I think that's what Scott's got some really valid points on just enforcement and monitoring and things to that effect. But I really just want to remind everyone about the reserve, keeping some money in there for when we reduce the waste going into landfill, we still have money going towards diversion.
So my suggestion for an educational thing that would be helpful, and even helpful for me, would be when you go to the green machine, there's a few rudimentary signs about what's okay and what's not okay. Some kind of a flip chart attached to the end of the thing where you can, open it up and, I really shouldn't put that in there. And I suppose that only works for the people that actually
read it
or care. But
right. Some
but there's been times, there's garbage. Been, you know, like I didn't understand that I shouldn't be throwing my styrofoam egg cartons. That's not recyclable. And I didn't find that out until I took the time to go online and go to YVSC's website and play the game.
Good.
I played the game.
Well done, Tim.
The other thing to remember is, in order, it's reuse, repurpose, then recycle. So there's got to be focus on, reuse and repurpose.
Right.
And if we can keep that stuff locally, that's better. And there's some organizations, innovative regeneration, they're working on ways to do better with compost. And so I think that supporting those types of activities, I don't know how we do that. And so we don't have to drive across the divide. We'd have some discussions about pyrolysis, about converting plastics back into low sulfur diesel, and what's the operational cost and emissions, and you weigh the pluses and the minuses with something like that too. So we're thinking about all of those things.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys. Thanks, Catherine. Do you only talk about your geriatric cat to the city? We don't get to hear about your cat here at the county.
And geriatric cat.
I'll shoot you that email.
That's true. I never mentioned it to you guys.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Scott.
Oh, and off topic, the ROA passed downstairs too, which is good.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The election audit.
Oh, good. Great. For our congratulations.
Congratulations
to Kim.
Completely off topic.
Thanks, Catherine.
Governors.
Yeah. Where do you? Are you going to sit over there? You want to come sit over here? What do you want to do?
I can
I guess.
It's up to you. Are you sure you don't want to sit further away, Dan?
I don't think it hurts to sit in this arrangement. This
whatever you want to do.
Somebody's neck. Have you all had time to, like I say, the first three chapters and any feeling that this is a useful document for us to discuss policy and administration as you like to see it move forward?
Well, I mean, the first obvious comment is that it was written for more towards administrators, although there were certainly takeaways for elected officials. I mean, it was like the advice was being dispensed to the administrator in this document. That's not to say that there wasn't a lot of good information that's important for elected officials to understand.
Certainly the elected officials in their supervision of the manager and oversight, and you know, certainly the key stuff, and certainly that's something that needs to be focused on by
the what?
A key item that needs to be focused on by leadership all the time is, you know, you're developing, making sure you have a shared vision that you're moving forward with. And certainly I think that was a key for even what I would suggest that maybe I lost sight of. And making sure that if there's a direction that management is heading, that it's well-defined and as much as possible put in writing so that the board can take a look at it and provide directions, such as we did this week, as we did, as Dan did a couple of weeks ago with the you know, ERP discussion and the PPP discussion, and you know, providing more of a detailed direction on how we can move forward with that stuff.
Yeah, I didn't think that. I don't know. You can comment. I read it. I didn't think it said anything new than what we already didn't know. And I think, you know, we've had our sessions and discussed things. And so I think.
I thought there were, yeah, I mean, I don't think any of it's rocket science, but I thought they articulated some of the things that maybe we've been challenged with and some items that we could refocus some attention on that could help with some of the concerns that have been raised around just the relationship and how that works, and reassuring that this is common, right? It's always somewhat of a challenge. And I think, to your point, Tom, what stood out to me the most was, let me find the page where I was thinking about that, but like what you said, that doing a really good job of developing some strategic priorities and planning that provides us the opportunity to really make that concrete so that you can work from that. And that's probably where we've fallen short is in doing that. And, you know, as they laid out in this document, that can create some of the challenges that we've perceived.
That we've been through, yes.
Yeah, I thought, you know what you guys...
I highlighted it somewhere, but I can't find it right now. I thought there were some interesting comments about risk assessment prior to moving forward with projects, and that's, I think that's obviously been I can't say that it's not like risk assessment was not engaged in. I mean, I think we did to some degree, but maybe that's something we should focus on more thoroughly at the beginning.
I'd agree with that, and along with really, as we've discussed over the last few weeks, is identifying what the expectation for the outcome is, and developing a plan to that purpose with a timeline, and you know, how we're going to get there, and what are the impacts on our capacity to get all that done.
I thought those were two things, you know, really making sure that there's a clear outcome goal that comes from us, from the board, and that when there's not clarity, asking questions to make sure that there is clarity on the intended outcome.
I highlighted that particularly in circumstances when an issue is complex and or controversial, the direction of the governing body may not be clear. and I think that's a
that's a good point.
A fair assessment of where we've been on some things in the past.
Well, and I thought that...
And so whose fault is that? Well, that's not really a question of fault.
Collectively, it's our responsibility.
It's just a question.
It's a response.
How do you get clarity? You know, how do we get clarity? And is that you guys asking much more pointed questions of us? Or is that us as a governing board recognizing that we're being pretty vague here? We really need to pin this down.
And I think it's both.
Yeah, probably.
Quite frankly.
Two sides to every story.
Well, and to the risk point, I thought it was really important to recognize that where elected officials have some insight is around understanding what risks might be out there in the community and how things will be perceived, and that it's important for us to have the opportunity to bring those perspectives when we're discussing the risk of taking on something, whatever it is. What else?
Well, there's also discussion here about, you know, procedures on how local governments should move forward. I mean, they talk about, you know, certainly within mayor council government and then the emergency roles, but, you know, that description is also applicable to, you know, our group, our county, and what is the expectation of the board chair and work relationship with the manager, you know, to do the, I'm looking specifically at page 6, and there's some bullet points under
American. What page?
6.
Page 6. Mm. And if you're looking at the PDF copy of it, it's
page 6.
It's still 6.
Okay, still 6. Okay, yeah. The what's acceptable, I think we started to define some of that with our meeting to discuss leastwise our work session topics and developing that calendar, but there's these bullet points here that you know, that lend to not only including discussion and looking to this board or this group, but how do we relate all this stuff to communicating with the citizens, with the residents?
I guess I thought all of this was helpful to read, and I guess my question would be, based on what we have discussed and the things, the goals that we've set around moving forward, what new information does this bring us that we need to act on? I mean, I guess I would partially direct that to you, Tom. What do you see that maybe we should be doing a little bit differently as a result of reflecting on these concepts?
Sorry, as I read through this, I certainly had those thoughts,
mm-hmm.
and I've highlighted quite a bit of stuff in
yeah.
here. Especially the responsibility of the manager that would lend to the better communication, but also the understanding of what's going on by the Board of Commissioners. And what is the response, and are we doing this? I mean, certainly under the previous page, under the chief manager and the administrative officer, you know, certainly it's all these items carry out the policies of the county. I was really appreciative that they highlighted that the annual budget is a primary policy of the board and setting that every year. That really means that it's setting expectations for the completion of what's in that budget. And so one of my roles, and certainly as we had our budget discussion this year, is that I'm really paying more attention to the completion of the special projects that we've assigned for our capital pools to complete.
That sounds great. I like to hear that. Sometimes we can sit here and think, well, I don't know whether we why we even bother budgeting when they're not going to get done. So, you know, I guess we budget in the anticipation that they are going to get
with
done.
The expectation that they are.
That we're going to spend the money, not we're just throwing a
piece of paper in the fire.
So, again, I don't know. I think we're just much better. I still need, we need to kind of keep working on how we figure out how, you know, we can communicate with you when we believe that you might have underperformers, underperforming underneath you, and how we can communicate to you and how we can work on having them succeed and achieve. So,
appreciate that point, especially.
I don't know how that happens, but, you know.
Certainly, I mean, if you're hearing things from the community, and that that means likely or probably some county employee, and if you're hearing things, then, you know, relate that to Dan or me so that we know that there's something that we really need to address. As much as I think that I'm paying attention to those department heads that are acting responsibly to me, I know that I don't know everything that's going on down in their office. And I don't know everything that's going on with their, especially in the internal services department, what's going on with their delivery of service
to the internal customers.
To the internal customers. And those are you know, key to an effective organization, really.
Yeah, I highlighted, I thought, you know, the section about the, a key responsibility, obviously, is selecting, leading, and maintaining a qualified and effective group of staff, and that the staff has to be able to establish and maintain the confidence of not only the manager but also the elected officials.
Yeah.
And that figuring out, as Doug said, you know, what's the communication mechanism when that's we feel like staff members don't have our trust.
Yeah, bring them in and rake them over the coals. all three of us beat up on them. Just kidding. Sent me to sensitivity class.
yeah, and I mean, it's established a couple of times, right? So maintaining high staff performance is critical for your credibility, and yes. When the work of staff is not consistently meeting expectations, it's a serious problem. I mean, that's sort of, I think, and yeah.
Of course, having said that, I mean, how many department directors do we have?
13. 11 altogether.
How many?
11.
11. I mean, you're bound. You're always going to have one or two, you know, that aren't getting it done. I mean, likely. Law of averages.
And yeah, you know, that requires manager to really work with that department head to help them succeed, and that is a time-consuming aspect if you're not really paying attention to what's going on. If you're trying to fix something that's really broken, then you probably waited too long. So being able to, in a position of reporting, staff reporting, is to be in a better position to be mindful of what changes, to be able to see the possibility of something breaking down and heading in a new direction before it actually does break down.
There's an off-the-cuff question. In your long career, how often have you actually been able to take an underperforming department director and turn them into a well-performing department director?
Good question. I would suggest only occasionally if they're really underperforming, you have to have a relationship with them so that you know what's going on before it goes bad. And you keep on impressing the good practices that they have, and then anytime you're seeing any shortcoming, that you're addressing those as soon as possible at the time that you actually see
before them. They become underperforming.
Before they become underperforming. From my experience, I guess the real answer to your question, Tim, is that you know, work with them to require them to do the job. And as long as you're continuing to require them to do the job and you're holding them accountable, they will either improve their performance or they'll leave.
Yeah,
That doesn't happen all the time, but my experience is that it does happen.
I guess an example of that, frankly, is I would be pretty pessimistic about Kathy's ability to rectify the situation within her office. Sorry, I forgot.
You know, I don't think...
It's tough. It's tough to turn things around, for sure. There's no doubt.
At the same point in time, you know, we're hiring, trying to hire the best we can get out there. There's no, we're not hiring the 30% quartile. You know,
right?
You know, I agree with
that.
Yeah, we should be getting good people, and mm-hmm. you know, and hopefully that, you know.
Well, I think you know, also articulated in here is that providing a level of customer service at the level that we or the community are willing to pay for too. I mean,
yeah,
theoretically, right. you can get whatever you want, right? As long as you can pay for it. And that's not to say that our staff is underpaid. I don't think that that's true, but I think. You know, you have to always balance that as well. Understanding that we are the public sector, not the private sector, and that there's a balance there.
And everything is public information, too.
Right.
People don't understand that, so, you know.
Absolutely.
Comments, Dan?
Interesting conversation.
I agree, you know, and frankly, it is that. If something I could do better at is getting out of my chair more, get out of my office more, and going out to departments. But as effective as that, you know, management by walking around can be, when the manager walks around into an office, you know, things change or the activities change almost immediately.
That's accurate.
No, I think
that's
yeah, absolutely.
Accurate.
It's going to happen. So whether you go down there or whether we go down there.
So it does require, without suggesting that an employee needs to talk out of class. I mean, hope the employee is trusting their department supervisor enough that where they can talk with them. But I'm a realist enough to know that that doesn't happen. And a lot of times employees, for whatever reason, don't feel like they can talk with their immediate supervisor.
I think the reality, though, I mean, from this document and just thinking about the discussion we're trying to have around governance and policy and administration is that just the recognition that there can be some loss of trust from the board when yeah. there are employees or department heads, you know, that... we are not seeing what we want to see from them, and that that's problematic, right? And that it's losing trust in management as well as that individual employee. And so identifying the ways to fix that. You know, it's never going to be perfect, like Tim said, but...
I agree with you. I think that's, if nothing else, that's a clear message from these three chapters,
right.
That the manager does need to recognize the accountability that's required to make sure all that happens.
I mean, I think I would just go back to the original, the first thing that you said, which is laying out the role of strategic planning and setting clear targets. I mean, within this document, it was really clear that that's an important mechanism for really... And I would agree with that. I think maybe that's been where there's some room for improvement and could help with some of these things that we've talked about, having some clear direction and clear vision about where we want to go.
Maybe prioritized budget could be a part of that process.
I think it absolutely could be, but it's not the whole process.
I'm a part
yeah.
Well, hopefully our,
Monday
work sessions are working toward that. That's,
I think they do.
I think they will.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, we'll see, I guess. Yeah. It's a lot better than us getting updates from them every month.
I think it's helpful. I mean, those were my, that captures everything. I think this was a, to me, this is a helpful way to think about this information. To read this and really identify kind of what's in line with what we're already doing and where maybe there's some room for sometimes even just that understanding of it being articulated a certain way can be valuable.
I can't remember which one of you said it, but I think maybe you, Doug, that there's, I don't think there's anything in here that we haven't recognized that we should be doing. And I think what really helped me with this is that even though I understood all this stuff, and I like to think that this is in my mind when I'm doing almost everything, even though it's a lot, what's in this document, that I do consider those things and try to be mindful of them, but reading them every once in a while, it can really be helpful. So that's what I think I need to do also.
I thought it was helpful. And, you know, hopefully it can continue to be helpful. I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to identify concrete, but just being reminded of these principles, I think, is good.
You know, I think part of it's going to be that we still have an opportunity, whether we do it during your time or whatever, to vent or vet and, you know, talk about concerns that we might see out there, short of wait until it blows up and somebody's mad about it, instead of, you know, dealing with an issue and dealing with it up front and being me communicating maybe better as well, so before it becomes an issue.
Well, I think a good example of it was this business with the human services thing. I did reread the RFP, and I think maybe I had not studied it as closely as I should have the first time around. And I think most of the elements of what I want to see are actually in there, so I apologize for that. But having said that, the time for me to picture about it is right now. Not wait 3-4 months from now. Let's talk me through it and make sure that I'm comfortable, we're comfortable moving forward with something that we kind of understand what's out there.
Well, I think it's that piece where what you're doing, in my mind, you know, it's vision, right? So it's that communication about expectations. And, you know, if the three of you are bought in on the expectations, let's go, right? You know, but until we're ready,
let's not go
down the path, right?
Right.
You know, because otherwise it's the herky jerk, and then you've got...
Yeah, we don't want to have the herky jerk here, no. And again, so then you guys, somebody gets out in front, and then, whoa, wait a second,
right.
We're not there.
Right.
You know, so
I mean, it's that thoughtfulness as much as anything, and like building in time for those kind of conversations. About it. I'm not sure I'm on board with his. And just
I need another week, figure it out.
What you just said, Doug, you know, just venting or vetting out, you know, those ideas, and like having time to talk through that stuff. I mean, I think that needs to be scheduled in a way. You know?
Yep.
And you know, I think the observation of the time that you all get all of the department heads together is really maybe. Budget kickoff meeting. It's about the extent of it right now in terms of structured time. And I don't think that's enough, personally. I mean, and so then it's just a question of, you know, thinking about the calendar concept of the budget, but also the calendar of how do you want the year to unfold. You know, if you're spending 8 months of your year on budget, and, you know, what time.
It's a lot of time.
Well, what time is spent on planning or on, you know, any of the project execution or any of those check-ins? And so.
Right.
It's structure, you know, creating a structure that, you know, gives you the time to speak, you know, and to give us enough, you know, preparation to maybe course correct where it's not too late.
Well, and there's a lot in here about targets and outcomes, and I think one place where we can all probably collectively work on is being clear about what those are, right? I mean, if we're very clear about what our targets are, our outcome objectives with the human services building, for example, then we don't have to get in the middle, and we shouldn't get in the middle of the RFP process, because we're all on the same page about exactly where we're headed. And obviously, maybe there's some, we didn't do a great job of that if there's a concern that we're not going to head in the right direction, right? So I think it's, can be something we can all collectively
and
work on.
And these things have different levels of importance. I mean, there's some, I sure as heck don't want to be reading every RFP that goes out the door, you know.
Right.
But there's, you know, where I have a high level of interest, yeah, I do want to read that one.
Well, and I haven't been quaint about saying this. I like to have my fingerprints on everything, whether it's all 10 fingers. or maybe one that's cut off. I don't know. So, yeah, I'd like to know what the hell's going on. I don't need me to be there every one of the two, but when we get these processes moving forward, I think it's important for one of
us. Well, there's a big difference in putting out an RFP for a copier repair and paper supply than
totally
for the construction of a new building.
I think, though, at the same time, there were some pretty clear statements in this document about the risk of us not recognizing what our role is and getting in the middle of places where we shouldn't as well. So I think that's important to be mindful of. I mean, just knowing what that line is.
I don't disagree with that, but when
Agreed.
We're heading into something new
Absolutely.
And something different, we ought to be there plodding along with it. And I don't want to turn it.
That's part of the risk. That's risk assessment.
Well,
it's kind of the same thing. what you're saying is plotting and being a part of this thing on the front end. That's what you're talking about. What could go wrong here? You know.
Yeah.
What's the risk
Good
here?
Point.
Let's
yeah.
try to do what we can to avoid that risk.
And how much risk are we willing to tolerate? I mean, that's how much risk we're willing to tolerate.
Right, that's true.
Well.
Yeah, you're not ever going to eliminate risk, I guess.
But I think you're right, Doug, and my point is to say it's not a bright line of where that is, but that we have to be mindful of understanding how if we're not respectful of the difference between our role and Tom and Dan's role, then we could really throw things off the rail too. So just, you know, wanting information is definitely, I think, our prerogative, but understanding what the distinction is.
Well, what to do with
what to do with the information.
Yeah,
fair enough.
And how you go about doing it.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, we just looking at a page down here, page 25, where it's evaluating the effectiveness of policies. And basically that does citizen engagement part, collecting and doing surveys of citizens, whether there's a data analysis comparison and established performance indicators. So that requires us to have some performance indicators for us to measure. So again, I think that's something that PBB will help us with. But at some point, it does get down to how do we include the citizens or our residents in identifying, are we on the right vision? Are our strategic initiatives, are they really what the citizens or residents are really looking for us to do? Are we heading down the right direction that's in alignment with our residents?
So that's all fine, Tom, but I guess, and then who are they judging? Are they going to judge the three of us? Are they going to judge the county operation as a whole, or
the
services that we provide?
Hopefully the focus would be on the services that we're providing.
I thought the discussion of the difference between owners and customers was really interesting. I never really thought about it that way before, and I thought it's just an interesting distinction. I mean, more intellectual than anything else, but
you're right. So this isn't an intellectual.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because I think that's partially what you're speaking to. I mean, do you want feedback in terms of ownership, like what people are paying for, right, versus customers and what level of service is being provided to individuals who are utilizing different services. And it's both, I think, but yeah.
Well, you get
interesting.
A culture of ownership in employees. I mean, that's what you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
And so like that's an area where, you know, an internal service, kind of an internal survey can help you create and building some of the systems around ownership. So people are going the extra mile, are trying harder, are doing
interesting.
Some things. That can actually have positive benefit, you know, on the community. It doesn't necessarily doesn't make the distinction of an owner as a community member as much. Although obviously, if they're bought in, they're participatory, and they're giving you their ideas and getting more involved in things like planning commission, you know, we're not pulling teeth to try to find planning commission members. But again, it's a mindset shift.
It's interesting. But, I mean, I think, Doug, your question was really what's the right way to solicit that feedback? I mean, other than just do we get reelected or not? But what else might be a valuable way? Or is that enough,
right? I was
afraid
of asking a question anyhow. If they haven't already demanded it of us, I'm always afraid, well, yeah.
They're going to ask.
Oh, yeah, you need to plow my road twice a day, or you need to do, yeah, if you're going to ask me, that must mean you got extra time or money to provide for that. So,
that's a good point.
Hey, I can ask for the sky. So
I really did like, though, that statement they kept making about it's what people want and are willing to pay for.
Yeah. I like that.
I thought that was a really helpful framework.
Yep.
For thinking about soliciting input.
Usually the way my conversations go with constituents, right, when they complain, I mean, seriously, I just say that to them.
So which road don't you want me to plow next week?
No. Or how much are you willing to see your taxes to go up?
Yep.
Right.
I'd love to do that for you.
Well, and I do think we make an assumption that people are not willing to pay more, and I think a lot of times that's probably accurate, but there may be places where people would want to pay more to see something different.
And we've been part of a couple, three of them. I mean, we've done a couple. I mean, Horizons, museums, and PDR, you know.
Right.
People, if you got them, you don't need to escape.
Yeah. The presumption of many of our constituents is that we could and should be doing more with what we have.
And so the responsibility is on us to communicate about what we're doing with what we have, right?
Are we really doing that or not? I don't know. That's a tough one to answer sometimes. All it takes is one person driving down the road and seeing a road and bridge guy standing around on a shovel drinking a cup of coffee, and that's it. You know?
Forget it.
You guys are all a bunch of lazy whatevers.
But I think part of the, if I understand correctly, to go back to PBB, part of the goal is to be able to communicate some of that and to understand where are there places where maybe there could be a shift, if that was desired.
And to have, to that point of having the cost of things, so that knowing the trade-off,
right,
or transparency around what the costs are of this versus this.
Absolutely.
Anything else? You ready to move on to commissioner stuff?
I think this is helpful. Thanks for sending this over. And I think we finding the opportunity to revisit some of this as needed, it would be great. And I think to Doug's point, figuring out what is the right mechanism for communication around so that problems are solved immediately, you know, and not allowed to linger.
You might not even see, or you and Dan, neither one might see something that we see that, and we don't have the ability to cure it.
Right.
So you might not even know that whatever is out there and whatever we're talking about. So I think, and again, I guess we'll spend more time knocking on your door and come in and we'll have a private conversation for a minute. And then if you, if I make you aware of it, we can figure out how it goes from there.
And I think it might be helpful, if you could let us know what is your preferred method for receiving that information. They pointed out in here, I thought it was really interesting, they pointed out, your council, as they talked about, but may not all have the same desires in terms of communication and preferred style, and how do you navigate that?
Yeah, that's quite clear. Tim's level of communication is a lot different than mine. So.
Well, and just
methods,
right?
Yeah,
and so, especially, I would say if Doug is feeling like he doesn't have the opportunity to share concerns, then it's sort of incumbent on you to figure out how to give him the opportunity to do that, right?
Yeah, and I just need more forthright.
And I think it's on everybody.
It is on everybody.
Yeah.
And it is providing those opportunities to communicate. And frankly, if I'm in my office and any one of you want to come into my office, then please do.
And again, this whole thing, your daily, your weekly logs just can't, how we would function without them. I think they are so invaluable that, otherwise we wouldn't have a clue to what you were doing or what's happening.
It's a means of communications.
Even if it can't possibly cover the full breadth and scope of what he's dealing with.
Oh, absolutely.
It's enough of a breadcrumb trail that
yeah.
It opens up, you can ask questions and follow up on them.
And that's important. They're so right in their work. They said the manager needs to recognize, you know, also the governing board members, how individually each of them like to be communicated with, and make sure that that's happening.
Right. I thought that was a valuable
insight.
So are we going to, what are we doing?
So we had talked about, I think we were going to have Kendra bring that list, right? So you guys know that, as we had discussed with the agenda, that I've been meeting with Tom and Dan and Kendra and going over that on a regular basis. And then we wanted to have an opportunity for the whole board to see what's planned and make sure that we all understand what's on the just an agenda review to make sure we understand what's on the list and if you guys have any questions and that you agree with kind of where we've been headed with that.
Sounds good. Let me go get my... Do you want me to go holler at her? Then?
Yeah, just have... Maybe don't holler,
I'll
but...
Holler.
Okay, sounds good.
It's like yelling at a cat.
Andrew, you want to come in?
It's really warm.
It is warm in here.
I am like... I'm never too warm.
Okay, so has everybody read this inventory thing?
I haven't yet. Okay. I see your email, though.
So, tell me this, and I'll ask this tomorrow, but maybe you can think about it. So, there's 25,000 people in the county, right?
Mm-hmm.
Half
26,000.
Half of them live in the city.
Yep.
Right.
And the other half live in the county.
Correct.
And then we have hardly zero commercial units in the county.
Correct.
All the commercial units that does anything for anybody is in the city. And we also have accommodations for an additional 12,000 people that come here on any given weekend.
Right.
So at any point in time, the county can be 12,000 people and the city can be 24.
Correct.
So why would this emissions report come up saying that the city comes up with only 36% of the total emissions and that the county comes up with two-thirds, 711 parts of the thing?
It's almost cows you got out there.
Well, that's why I got the inventory from Todd. But how when there's no way, I mean, and then they come back and say, well, all of those emissions are created from buildings. The biggest boost on the against the environment is buildings. Well, where are all the buildings? They're in the city,
mm-hmm.
and the county is, yeah, we I can see us contributing to the transportation part of it, but it starts, you know, it's basically on page 79 of our fact packet.
It's a good question.
I
don't know.
What is this? All these
buildings,
voodoo math.
All these buildings that are in the city are also in the county, Doug.
You can't count them that way.
Double count them.
So, but I saw 36% goes to the city and 71 comes to the county. It's like I say, it's voodoo math.
It's interesting.
Well, I suppose if you count power plant.
Well, so I guess
then they said that they did count the power plant because it serves all the external markets. They did count all of the coal mine, even though coal mine serves the power plant, which serves all the people outside of our boundary. I'm sorry. It'll be a great discussion.
Well, I think it'll definitely be important to understand where the heck these numbers even come from. I mean,
or what is the number? What is the number?
Yeah.
What is that? MTCO2E.
Right.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
So that's going to be my question.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I'm a little behind. Usually I read stuff on the weekend, but I didn't get to it. Do you want me to just, Kendra, do you want to? Okay. So we have been just working through that list that there you go. And Kendra's been tracking some notes and whatever. And excuse me. So this is kind of just a simplified version of what is planned currently. And the biggest thing, I think, is this is what we're talking about for Monday sessions for the rest of the year. And obviously there's some space in here to add a few additional things. Not a lot of space, but we really wanted to just use that as a landmark and say, Is there anything that you want to make sure we get to before the end of the year? Is there anything on here that you don't know what it is or you have a question about it? Is there anything that you say, that's really not a priority before the end of the year? Just to make sure that we're all three of us are understanding of where we're headed between now and January. Anything else, Kendra? Is that,
yeah.
Okay. So I guess we can give them a minute, obviously, to look at what's here and then...
So the things that we've been working all along, the GOFOA, and so when are they, are we keeping that on task, or are we
intending to have another discussion about GFOA before the end of the year? Because they're coming in May, December. Just asking. Yeah, asking.
Okay.
There may not be time to talk about it between when they come and the end of the year, right?
Yeah.
But just asking,
So they're the 11th, 12th, 13th of December. I don't know. There may be time on the 9th then if you want.
I'm fine with maybe after.
Yeah, I think after.
A little debrief might be
better. I'd like to have
better time
to read what, you know.
Okay.
So when will they
be? We're going to be seeing some kind of a report, right?
Yeah. You know, I guess I'm in. We've scheduled a few different times to calls with them before they get here, and then we'll obviously have 3 days. My expectation is there'll be sort of a list of recommended actions and general idea of when we want to sequentially do those when they leave on the 13th. So if we wanted to do the 16th, we might be able to have it, or the 15th, I guess it is. No, it's the 16th. We might be able to have that conversation.
Oh, yeah, these dates are not all correct.
Yeah.
Monday is the 16th of December, not the 15th.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. 16th, 23rd, and 30th. The other ones are correct.
Just so you get Christmas right.
So.
I mean, that could be a possibility, just to debrief out of what we heard those 3 days and generally, like, where we think we're going to go.
Yeah, I just wanted. Through that whole thing there, I mean, I'm advocating and lobbying for a plan to get to some finish line.
No, I want to lock in the room.
Exactly. So we're all on the
same
page.
There needs to be a plan. Well, it looks like the 16th is probably full, but...
We have a half hour at the end of the day right now. Would that be enough time, or...
Or do you... I mean, I guess a question of from when they're here to when you'll be ready to share something, sort of a plan with us. I mean, would the 23rd be adequate time to prepare something?
That could work too, yeah. I mean,
is the 16th adequate time? I mean, that's really, we're talking about they're here.
I mean, I guess I wouldn't
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then that's Monday.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of putting it in the agenda, which I know we want to do, it's probably better to do the 23rd then.
Okay.
Because then we theoretically have that debrief. You know, with that, and you know, drop it in on Wednesday, whatever that is.
20. Yeah. So I assume there's time on the 23rd?
We have an hour, 4 to 5.
So put GFOA on the 23rd?
Yeah.
Anything else you guys have questions about, or that you...
So, again, so your master plan, then, are we going to have, like, a master plan update or something?
I think we have one tomorrow, don't we?
Yeah, he was supposed to schedule those, so I'm assuming he would shout to
you.
Okay,
yes.
That's all fine.
Yeah, I think there's one tomorrow, if I remember correctly.
Because the process question, we didn't get that email either that Troy got, so...
Well, it's a little, I think because planning sort of reserves time on Tuesdays, they have been just inserting their work session items on Tuesday instead of on Monday, if they don't have a public hearing item.
Well, this is, you know, I think a vestige of how we've always done things, is that planning wanted documentation of their work session items, so they would have them on Tuesday, so they'd be recorded and minutes would be created. Now, obviously, that can happen on Monday, and I think that's been communicated, so I can remind them that Mondays are available as well, but that's been their pattern, is to have Tuesday.
So maybe I think that's planned for tomorrow, and so that's fine. We'll just go ahead with that, but maybe following this, we can just, when they have things that are more like a work session, let's maybe do them on Monday instead.
There's not tomorrow work session. There's no time on master plan.
I thought there was. Maybe it's next week.
He had switched some things because they're doing the greenhouse gas study tomorrow.
Yeah. So Troy's email said, I'll be there on whatever day at 4:30, whatever that was. Maybe it's next week. 26th? Is he on there the 26th?
25th, we have the review and discussion on the plan for the master plan with planning.
So it is on the 25th?
Yes.
It's not on this list.
Okay. I think because he had just made these changes last week when he sent an email about
it. Okay, so we're going to get an update on the master plan on the 25th.
Plan the plan.
Yes.
What did you ask to call it?
Project plan.
Project plan. The master plan, project plan. Okay. But yes, it's on there.
And he's got a deadline to submit his grant. The second is a Monday, so I presume some discussion about that as well.
He should be getting that on the agenda for the 26th. No, I mean,
yeah, it has to be the 26th.
Yeah, and then we also have planning has quite a few items for the 26th.
Well, if one of them's not his DOLA grant approval, then...
It is the... Okay. Yeah. Yep, he's doing that at 3 o'clock for the DOLA grant review.
Perfect.
I'll update that and then send you guys a new topic.
So back to the PBB then, to you guys then. So when are we going to start off with the October and ongoing we had here going on? So... Are we waiting until Resource X comes again, or are we going
to
have...
They're looking to come the end of January the 23rd, I think.
Okay, that's fine, just so we have it on our list. So
yeah, I talked to them this morning about that plan and about some resources, and so I'm trying to line that out, what the day would look or days would look like.
I'm just keeping it on my brain list.
That's
fine. Great.
And those are Thursday, Friday days, and so they'll have a couple people come up, and that wouldn't necessarily obviously be a Monday, but you know, want to include you in that discussion in some fashion, so it would be per se a Monday work session.
Yeah, we had talked about regrouping around the budget calendar and the discussion of PBB in January, right, is what we discussed, I believe? Yeah, okay. But yes, it's still on the list.
So we got another one here that I've got pretty pressing in my brain here, the security study. And we gave an action plan during the budget. I mean, we allocated monies for that, so... Do we just sit and let that happen and figure out what...
I don't think so. No. You know, we did, Tom, I don't know if you've had a chance to follow up on that next week, but one of the items we wanted to do to talk about was making sure facilities lays out for us, like we discussed, a plan for projects for the year. And I don't know if the security assessment is separate from that or just as a part of that. So I don't know what timeline you're pushing for with Steve on that. What are you thinking?
I've actually been communicating with Ray.
With Ray, yeah. Right.
So which brings up the one for 11/25, the new PW position.
Yeah.
Ray actually, is that the one he came in and said he was going to move it because he's leaving for Thanksgiving? He came into the office the other day and he said, Beth, what do you think? I'm either going to delay my Thanksgiving or I can do it with you guys a week or two later. And I said, you should just do it a week or two later, right? And that way, okay.
So this has been moved here then?
Yeah, a couple weeks I think is what he...
So again, I'm all good with that too. I just want to make a hope.
That I've got moved communication to Monday the 23rd.
The 23rd.
December 23rd?
December 23rd, yeah.
Yes.
On the 25th?
Yeah.
Unless he was going to just have somebody else come talk about it.
Yeah.
one of these ones on the 26th. So sorry, I don't think we quite finished. So including the security assessment with the facilities plan for 2020, and what timeline are you thinking about, Tom? What have you and Ray been talking about
to have that ready? I need to get a date from
you. Okay.
I don't have a date.
Yeah, probably by the end of January, though, don't you think? Yes. Yeah, because otherwise we're getting
into the...
Kind of
like what we talked about budgeting.
Yes. Yeah. But that's on the radar and being worked on.
Leveling is Monday the 25th.
So it's staying.
What about on the 6th?
I think it is empty right now.
That is empty because you guys are at CCI.
Nope. January 6th.
That is empty.
Nothing planned yet.
Yep. We had a couple, like the fair operations, the policy personnel month, manual. Those were kind of tied into something else that got bumped out. So the fair operations is going to be, that is being combined still, I believe. But I think you guys kind of wanted to hear her presentation to see if you wanted a follow-up.
So we're here not on the 15th, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then we have a slot for a follow-up on the 12th.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to be required.
Okay.
I mean, maybe. I don't.
Yeah. And then the personnel policy manual was just something that you guys had talked about that you wanted to see in January. So that one has been scheduled. But then kind of January on is pretty open.
It'll fill up.
Where are we at on the classification updates?
Yeah, when will we be ready for an update from...
Gotten drafts of a lot of them, and some of the crosswalk and stuff was updated, but I don't know exactly the time that is, you know, ready or when. You know,
I'm all good with that. I'm just remembering that.
I think that was on our list when we talked last week, wasn't it?
It was.
Somebody was going to follow up and find out when it was going to be ready for presentation.
I know that Kathy is working on her review of the job description product that came from CPSHR, so she was working on that last week.
Yeah, I mean, if we're planned all the way out until January 20th, though, I imagine sometime before then it would be ready, and if not, then shortly after that. Do you guys have anything else?
So probably down the road some, I don't know, unless we hold. So conceptually, we probably need to talk about how the development fee analysis that we had discussion.
Right.
Do we kick that can down the road and forget about it until after the master plan, or do we have, I'm really asking.
Yeah, I don't know.
We kind of need to decide that. Do we want to push it forward before the master plan?
What do you think the master plan is going to change about that particular fact of life?
You know, I am quite open-minded. I don't have any expectations of what's going to come out of the master plan myself.
I suppose you're going to have the result of the master plan that there's absolutely no new development out in the county. Therefore, you don't need impact fees, huh? Is that what you're thinking?
No, I'm not thinking either way.
Does
the egg come first or the chicken come first? Should we wait and have the master plan come through and define the master plan and then have the development fee analysis and discussion come after the master plan based on the direction of the master plan?
I'd hate to wait a whole year because that's what we're talking about waiting would be a year.
But right now we don't have anything to update anyhow other than what we just talked about on parks and schools.
Yeah, because really besides the parks and school stuff, what we're really looking at is feasibility study and then the Nexus study. So do we want to spend the money on those items prior to the master plan update? And I guess I'd probably just put a pin in it until we...
I'm fine with that.
I'm okay with that as well.
I would see that as an action out of the master plan one way or the other.
Yeah. I agree.
Do or do not.
Otherwise, we're pre-gauging what we want to see. I don't want to do that pre-gauge. I will a little bit maybe pre-gauge what I want to see in the master plan, but I don't want to take it for granted. That
well, and theoretically, we'd have to redo it if something changed significantly, right?
Yep.
I mean.
So I guess I'm just saying then we probably can agree to kick that can down the till after we, I think it's going to be a full product to get the
I think that makes sense.
Done too.
So, Dan, I assume you'll communicate that to the planning department, that that's where that discussion is at for now? Okay.
Should be and will be in part of the master plan.
With the exception of the stuff that's already
in the parks and school stuff, it's pretty clear that we need to just fix that.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
How frequently do you guys want to do this? I've been sitting and checking in with these guys on a weekly basis, and we might spread that out further once it's a little more established. But do you guys want to review the agenda maybe monthly? Does that okay?
I mean, we're on
the list of upcoming topics.
20 minutes to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think I agree with Tim.
Okay,
that sounds good.
Do you have a comment, Dan? You're making your I have a comment face.
Face.
Yeah, you do.
Good to know.
Yeah.
You know, kind of what the previous conversation along that line is, you know, these are just topics. So, you know, the questions that you might have or the, you know, the information we should ask in the presentation, that's helpful to put in this too. And that can be conveyed to the department that is preparing. You know, who do you expect to hear from? What are you curious about? Those kinds of things. Helpful to put on this topic.
So, I mean, if we're looking at, I mean, really probably November and December now at this point, just to make sure we're giving that back to people. Are there, I guess, topics on here where we feel like we need to provide something to staff prior? Or did you have any of these in mind, Dan, that you think we need to provide questions?
Not necessarily, although, you know, there are things on here, I mean, or things in the future, just it would be helpful, you know, because we're going to get the question, you know,
yep.
What do they want to hear?
Well, and we've already gotten that related to the fair,
right.
And we know that there was some back and forth with Kendra on that, and Ray understood what was being asked for, and that really he needed to be inserted into the conversation rather than the back and forth with Jill, is what it sounded like happened. That the department director should really.
So I was a little concerned about, and again, I was fearful of this. Maybe anyhow, I was concerned about Ray's comment that, you know, we're adding more workload on him too. I hopefully as we get down the road here.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I was going to say, you know, I didn't want to write back directly to Ray, but Tom, isn't he already preparing an update for you?
Yes.
And is there any reason he couldn't just forward that on to us?
As far as I'm concerned, no.
So maybe just communicate that to him, because and from what I've seen, it's the same.
It has been mostly the same.
Yeah, so I hope he
doesn't. This whole other thing that we're doing right now and what we're trying to do is presenting moving forward targets and not historical things and aspirational things that we're moving forward on not what happened last week, so.
Yeah, so I think
last week we come in through this log.
He provided the update. So that's a lot more detail than I'm putting in mind, but.
Well, and I think the reality, I mean, it's up to you how strictly you want to enforce those deadlines. From my perspective, I mean, I don't really care when we get the updates as long as we get an update on a monthly basis from the department heads. If it's a week later, I'm not even going to know the difference, honestly. So,
yep.
I mean, I think you have to decide how you want to communicate that with department heads. But if Ray's feeling a lot of pressure and it's, I mean...
I think he felt more pressure by the this concept thing than.
Well, it is a lot more pressure because we're talking about real things.
I think it is too.
Right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
and forward thinking.
Right,
and it's harder. I think the beforehand concept is maybe new to them.
Like it needs to be submitted ahead of time and some thought put into it.
No, just the forethought that they're bringing something to you guys ahead of time and you're going to be able to say, no, I think you should be looking in this direction instead. instead of being like, oh, shoot, you didn't do this. Well, I guess it's too late now. I think kind of that, you know, well, what are they going to say? Are they not going to like what I have to present? What if they want me to do something totally different? And now I've wasted all this time. And I've kind of had conversations and said, well, that's the point of this. So you don't waste that time.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that,
so you
get the feedback ahead of time. Far out in front of the horse.
Yeah, right?
So I think, Dan, also to your question, I mean, I would say that I'm happy to continue some, if we're meeting on a weekly basis and looking at these things, identifying what I think the objectives of that presentation are and that sort of thing. And if you guys have input on that, to just share that. But otherwise, I'm happy to do my best and take responsibility if I screw it up.
Sounds good.
Okay. Okay. Anything else? We good? All right.
You'll share that email from Denston Andrews. Bi-weekly payroll and payment in arrears?
No, I haven't opened. I didn't see it.
Are we off?
Did it just come? I mean, we're done. Yeah.
I didn't turn it on.
Awesome.